Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarba. I'm your host for the hour with my good friend and neighbor, Mike Metz of Milford Township and keeper of the Prairie Wind Prairie. Hey, Mike.
Hello there, Pat. The coyotes were singing last night.
Yeah, the coyotes are pretty active, and also raccoons were on the prowl as I was coming in. It was pretty dark out, but raccoons are moving too. I guess everything's hustling for...
Looking for food and denning.
Yeah, it is a season. So, the weather will be pretty nice like yesterday with a high of 56 and a low tonight of 41. And there will be temperatures in the mid-60s with plenty of sun throughout the weekend with lows in the 40s. Ah, yes, Indian summer is upon us after the hard frost this week. There are no freezing temperatures forecast in the coming week. Hey, I heard there was something important on Stephen Colbert last evening, Mike Murphy.
Yes, Stephen Colbert was actually, he brought up the fact that there's an outbreak of coronavirus in white-tailed deer in Iowa.
And we had the deer biologist, Tyler Harms, on last Tuesday.
Mike. That's right.
Yeah, and when I heard about this on Wednesday, I thought immediately was, oh, I wish we'd have known that. We'd have brought that up with Tyler. But with all your connections that you have with the diagnostic lab and the health interest in Story County, maybe we could get Tyler on and learn more about.
Well, let's hope so. Coronavirus is... there are many different coronaviruses. The COVID-19 is just one of them, and a number of mammals are susceptible to it. But if you recall, back about a year ago or so, some of the zoo animals were actually exposed and had tested positive for COVID-19.
So, and it makes me wonder, why would they even test the deer? How would they have discovered the fact that it was in the white-tailed deer? So there's a lot of
unknowns here.
Yes, yeah. There are. So maybe we can learn more about that in the coming weeks.
Sounds great.
Okay. Well, let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week from the pages of our local newspaper.
A fatal shooting in Ames, elections for school board and city council members, and the state legislature approves new redistricting maps. All made big news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start with last Friday's paper, which reported that two major rainstorms during the week had not ended the statewide drought, but they had put a dent into it. In Des Moines, October was the rainiest month of the year, more than 6 inches of the wet stuff having fallen. The previous rainiest month had been July, and October was one of the 10 wettest months on record for Des Moines. There was also word that an Ankeny resident, who was also an Iowa State University student, became the first woman enlisted infantry soldier in the Iowa National Guard. Taylor Patterson returned from basic training at Fort Benning in Georgia and is with the Company C, 168th Infantry. There are about 9,000 service members in the state National Guard. It's been 5 years since the U.S. Army opened combat arms positions to women. Patterson is studying animal science at ISU. And the Trib reported that the long-running 13th Street construction project in Ames had moved to its next stage. This latest stage shifted traffic to the newly constructed eastbound lanes between Burnett and Duff Avenues as the city started construction on the westbound lanes. That means the single-lane traffic that's been in effect for several months now will continue for about another month. And it means access to the north entrances to Douglas, Kellogg, and Burnett Avenues from 13th Street will be closed. Drivers will continue to have access to the McFarland Clinic and to Mary Greeley Medical Center from 13th Street. Saturday's Trib reported on its website that a fatal shooting had taken place at a Halloween party on Friday night in Ames outside the Elks Lodge on Douglas Avenue near downtown. Police believe a fight escalated into the shooting and that multiple people fired their guns near a crowd of about 100 people. A 23-year-old man was found shot at the scene. He was taken to Mary Greeley Hospital, where he died. No arrests had been made. There was also word that the state legislature had approved a new set of political boundaries last Thursday, completing the state's every 10-year redistricting process. The plan had been unveiled the week before by the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency. It was the second proposal released under the state's redistricting process and it establishes the electoral framework that will govern the next decade of Iowa politics. Iowa's biggest population centers will remain divided across the four congressional districts, as they are now, and voter registration totals will stay roughly identical to those of the current districts. The biggest shakeup will take place in the 3rd Congressional District, which will include Iowa's 2nd Congressional District Republican Congresswoman Marionette Miller Meek's home county of Wapello. She must now decide whether to stay in Wapello County and compete in the 3rd District or move. Iowa Democratic Congresswoman Cindy Axne now represents the 3rd District. Meanwhile, the state legislature took advantage of its special session on redistricting to pass a bill giving residents wider latitude to claim medical and religious exemptions from employer coronavirus vaccination mandates, and giving residents the ability to qualify for jobless benefits if a business fires them for not complying. The governor signed it into law last Friday. Hours later, Iowa joined 9 other states in suing the Biden administration over its vaccine requirement for workers employed by a federal contractor. The other states are Alaska, Arkansas, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wyoming. And the Trib reported that the city of Ames had celebrated the completion of the final stage of the Grand Avenue Extension Project with a ribbon-cutting ceremony last Friday. The final phase included the completion of 2 bridges, and now Grand extends from its old stopping place on South 5th Street all the way down to South 16th Street. It's the culmination of a project that was planned 30 years ago. It's designed to ease traffic on University Avenue and on South Duff Avenue by splitting the traffic that goes north and south throughout the city. One day, Grand may extend all the way to Airport Road, but no plans have been made yet to do that. Sunday's Trib reported that Ames school board candidates had spent tens of thousands of dollars campaigning in the weeks before Tuesday's election. They spent 7 times the amount that candidates spent in those board races in 2019. The 7 candidates reported getting more than $36,000 in contributions and spending nearly $32,000. Candidate Amy Erica Smith outraised and outspent her opponents. She received more than $11,000 in donations and spent more than $10,000. Another candidate, Kelly Winfrey, received nearly $8,000 in donations. Ames Deserves Better, the political action committee formed over the summer, raised $18,000 in contributions and spent $16,000. The group endorsed Tom Pearl, Rolf Duvick, and Kira Weirstein in the board race. Another candidate, William Scott Dreyer, raised no money for his campaign, and he said that was his plan from the start. The Trib also reported about how the Hamilton County town of Jewell had transformed its main street into a destination shopping hotspot. The town has a nearly full main street, which features 2 blocks of renovated brick storefronts, many of which were built in the early 1900s. Several have retail businesses with apartments on the upper story. Along with a bowling alley, Main Street in Jewell also offers services such as hair salons, a dentist's office, a chiropractor, and a bank. And the Trib also had word about the Iowa State University football team's game against West Virginia on Saturday. The Cyclones lost 38-31. Tuesday's paper reported that Ames police had identified the man who had been fatally shot outside the Elks Lodge on Douglas Avenue near downtown on Friday night. He was identified as 23-year-old Strasham D.L. Brown of Des Moines. The Trib also had word about what everyone who's gone to the grocery store in recent weeks already knew. Costs for food have gone up. The reason for those hikes include supply chain disruptions, labor shortages, and strong demand. But knowing that doesn't make it any easier for shoppers, who are paying nearly 18% more this year than last for beef and veal, 13% more for pork and eggs, 7% more for fish and seafood, and 6% more for poultry. And things are likely to get worse. Supplies are low for turkeys going into Thanksgiving, and experts say if you want turkey for that holiday, you should buy it now. The wholesale price for frozen turkeys in September was the highest it's been in 15 years. Wednesday's Tribune website had word about Tuesday's election results. In Ames, Amy Erica Smith, Kelly Winfrey, and Brett Becker won the 3 open seats on the Ames School Board, defeating 4 other candidates, 3 of whom had been endorsed by the Ames Deserves Better group. Ames Mayor John Hala was reelected. He had been unopposed. City Councilmember Gloria Betcher was also unopposed and won reelection. Council incumbent Amber Corrieri won reelection against 1 opponent, and Anita Collins won election to the Council 3 seat, replacing David Martin, who did not run for reelection. In Boone, longtime Mayor John Slight was reelected by a wide margin, and in Nevada, Mayor Brett Barker won reelection. He had been unopposed. In Story City, Mayor Mike Jensen also won re-election after running unopposed. The Trib's print edition reported on Wednesday that Ames' month-long city budget process would kick off yesterday with a chance for residents to give their input. A town budget meeting was set to be held last night at City Hall. The city is looking ahead to a number of projects, including a new municipal swimming pool on Lincoln Way near downtown and a new downtown plaza next year. And the city may consider a greater investment in affordable housing. And the Trib also reported that Morning Bell Coffee Roasters in downtown Ames had announced it would become the first workers' cooperative in Iowa starting January 1st. The transition from family-owned to employee-owned and operated has been in the works for more than a year. The goal is for employees to have 100% control of the business, to be able to set their own pay and working conditions. Morning Bell is at 111 Main Street in Ames. It opened 5 years ago. Yesterday's paper had more on the results of Tuesday's elections. The Trib reported that 21% of registered voters in Story County had turned out at the polls, compared to 12% in 2019. In Ames, more than 26,000 votes were cast in the school board election, compared with less than 14,000 2 years ago. And the Trib reported that the three winners of the Ames School Board election, Amy Erica Smith, Kelly Winfrey, and Brett Becker, read their victories as a call for the school district to continue its work on diversity, equity, and inclusion. The Trib also reported that Ames City Councilmember Anita Rollins will be the first black woman to serve on the council. She will replace David Martin, who did not seek re-election. She is the secretary of the Ames chapter of the NAACP. There was also word that McCallsburg Mayor Christopher Erickson had lost his bid for re-election, as did Councilmember Leanne Hazen. They both had been named in a state audit as having had reductions in their utility bills. And the Trib said the reason Story County's election results came in late on Tuesday night, technology problems, and a shortage of people to fix those problems. And one more note from yesterday, word that Hy-Vee would host a drive-through coronavirus testing site on the Iowa State University campus starting yesterday. It will be available by appointment only from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays in Lot F, west of Stevens Auditorium. And that is your summary of a busy week of news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart. Thanks for tuning in. Now, don't even think about touching that dial, because there's plenty more still to come right here on Local Talk. And make a note, we'll all have to turn our clocks back 1 hour to standard time this weekend, so that we'll all be right back here on time on Monday morning for the next Local Talk. That's when I'll have word on what's been making news all around Iowa. Until then, let's both have a great weekend.
Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for them springing fresh from the world. Sweet the rains new fall, sunlit from heaven, like the first dew fall on the first grass. Praise for the sweetness of the red garden, sprung in completeness where his feet. Mine is the sunlight, mine is the morning, born of the one light, Eden saw play. Praise with elation, praise every morning, God's recreation of the new day. like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for them springing fresh from the world.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News. And the music interlude was a rendition of Morning Has Broken with Yusuf Islam at the keyboard. And Yusuf is known musically as Cat Stevens. Through the climate change crisis, a discussion about a CO2 pipeline has been in the news recently. And here's KHOI supporter Carolyn Raffensperger with a bit more about carbon dioxide pipeline. Do you know the status of that?
I do. This is actually in my wheelhouse.
In wheelhouse pertaining to being the director of the Science and Environmental Health Network.
That and that I've been following the issue. Yes. Thank you, Pat. So a little background for our listeners. In June, I read an article in the Des Moines Register that said that the governor was putting together a task force on agriculture and carbon capture and sequestration. And that was interesting. Shouldn't we collect carbon? And given the kind of crisis that we've got with climate change. And so I started looking around at what was going on and discovered that there was this plan for a pipeline. So about the same time that the governor announced the task force, Bruce Rastetter announced that he had plans for this pipeline, a CO2 pipeline that was going to go across Iowa and involve at least four other states and end up back in North Dakota.
And who is now, Bruce Rastetter?
Bruce Rastetter is a well-known agricultural titan in Iowa. He used to be on the Board of Regents for the universities, the public universities in Iowa. So he's been a longtime Republican operative and, you know, fairly well known for putting together large, big plans for agriculture. Okay. He, at one point, had a plan for getting about 800,000 acres of land in Africa and raising corn and soybeans like we do in Iowa. So that plan fell through, in part because he had recruited the Iowa State University to partner in that particular plan. And it was a kind of colonialism that is no longer appropriate in this world. So that plan got shot down. And so I was just curious about what this pipeline was about. It turns out that they are planning on putting this enormous machinery on top of ethanol plants to capture the carbon dioxide that's emitted during the processing corn into ethanol. And then they were planning on shipping this through a pipeline to North Dakota, where they plan on burying it deep underground. So, okay, isn't that a good idea? It turns out it's a terrible idea for a number of reasons. The first is it takes a lot more energy to capture CO2. So you're going to actually create more carbon dioxide because you need so much more energy to capture CO2. So in the first place, it takes more energy than doing something different. In the second place, it actually deflects money from real carbon solutions. So, you know, is ethanol the ideal fuel? Are we going to keep on using fossil fuel cars and other vehicles, or will electric vehicles replace them? So right now, the federal government is planning on having all or most cars electrified, which means that we will not be needing as much gas and fossil fuels as we did before. So this is a short-term plan that takes an enormous amount of money, for it to work. In the third place, almost all of the projects that have been put in place to capture carbon with this great big machinery have failed. So around the world, they have built these devices, and then at huge costs, we're talking huge billions of dollars, and they end up failing. So it's a loss of money that could go into actual renewables. So shouldn't we just invest in at real renewables, solar, wind, what have you? And then lastly, the pipelines are actually dangerous. The carbon pipeline, the CO2 pipeline, is designated legally as a hazardous liquid pipeline. So it requires all sorts of controls and protections if it's not going to kill you. So unlike a oil pipeline, which if it spills, it might catch fire, no question, and it might contaminate groundwater, but the oil itself will not kill you. CO2, it turns out, is an asphyxiant, meaning it displaces oxygen, and in a high enough concentration, you can die in a very short time. So there has been one huge CO2 pipeline accident in this country in Setarsha, Mississippi, not quite 2 years ago. And it caused permanent damage to people who were exposed to the CO2. It turns out that the CO2 in Setarsha, the pipeline, also had a little bit of hydrogen sulfide, so they could smell it. And so they had a little bit of warning that they were breathing something that was toxic, and it was asphyxiating them. The problem that has been identified with the Summit pipeline, and there are two, by the way, two pipelines proposed for Iowa for CO2. Summit is one. And they don't plan on having any hydrogen sulfide in it. So you can't smell the CO2. If a pipeline ruptured and all of a sudden you couldn't breathe and your car won't run because it actually needs oxygen for internal combustion, you have no warning. You have no idea why it feels like a plastic bag has been pulled over your head that you can't see. You just can't breathe. It will kill you. So this pipeline is a terrible idea on so many counts.
Well, and another issue that comes to mind is the pipeline with the designation as the Dakota Access Pipeline, received eminent domain opportunities, or they justified using eminent domain to create the Dakota Access Pipeline thoroughfare right-of-way. Is eminent domain, has that entered into landowners that just feel like they don't want to put something potentially so dangerous close to their homes?
Well, I think the eminent domain issue is really interesting in this case. It will be invoked if the Iowa Utilities Board grants the permit and the right to a Summit to seize land through eminent domain. But it's not just that it is a hazardous liquid pipeline. It's also that the construction for a pipeline is so incredibly destructive. So a lot of us witnessed the destruction for the Dakota Access Pipeline, and the farmers are still in litigation and trying to settle. I don't know if the litigation's ended, but over Dakota Access, but it has been quite clear that the land has not recovered on those farms that hosted Dakota Access. And that is 5 years ago that we built that pipeline. And one of the things to note is that the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is the Koch brothers' arm for thinking about what policy should be, has said that we should have pipeline corridors, meaning if we've already got Dakota Access in the ground, then just use those rights of way and put another pipeline right next to it. So it looks like the Dakota Access Pipeline, people who lost their land through eminent domain or sold the easements voluntarily so they would not be subject to eminent domain, now will probably have a second pipeline running through their property. And the farmers that I've heard talk about this are pretty angry about the tiles that will be disrupted in their fields, the soil that if they have tended it well, don't want to see it destroyed, and then they don't want a hazardous liquid pipeline devaluing their land. And the problem with this is, in addition to, you know, eminent domain, is what happens to that pipeline when it's no longer in use. So Summit has no plans to remove that pipeline and think that it's going to be in operation forever. Well, that's ridiculous. It's the public policy is changing very quickly in response to climate change. Ethanol was never intended to be, you know, the fuel of the future. You know, there's so many problems with this. But the other thing that the farmers have said is, unlike a wind turbine, which it's on their farm or on their land, they get paid annually for that. But with the pipeline, it's a one-time payment for an easement, and they don't get the financial benefit years on end and that the pipeline company will get. So the financing is a problem. Eminent domain is a problem. The hazardous nature of this pipeline is a problem. And the fact that it's not a solution to climate, the threats that we have to climate, all go into our assessment that this is a terrible idea.
Okay. And you mentioned another entity there that seems to be quite prominent, the Iowa Utilities Board. Well, just a little background on their makeup.
The Iowa Utilities Board is a board that makes decisions about most of the utilities in the state, and they also grant permits for the hazardous liquid pipelines. So they were the permitting authority in Iowa for Dakota Access. And they are already involved in the procedures for Summit to get a permit or be denied a permit by the Iowa Utilities Board. So the board is comprised of three people. They're appointed by the governor. They can only have two members of the same political party. So they have a Democrat and two Republicans on that at this point in time. And they're charged with making the decision. It turns out, however, that the chair of the Iowa Utilities Board, Jerry Husar, is actually on the governor's task force on carbon sequestration, which seems to be a conflict of interest. That task force is looking for ways, probably hunting for subsidies and for ways to streamline the regulatory process in favor of these CO2 pipelines. So there will be an incentive for the Iowa Utilities Board to look the other way and ignore problems with this particular pipeline project.
And where are we at then on a timeline? What's appropriate to share with our listeners if they have feelings about this? Is it a done deal, or should they contact Iowa Utilities Board, or what do you suggest?
They can contact the Iowa Utilities Board. They can do a little research. The Iowa chapter of the Sierra Club and other organizations are doing really remarkable work organizing. And what I would like to note is we are in a terribly politically divided world right now, terribly divided. What is so strange to me and wonderful is that the pipeline brings together really unusual allies. And so the environmentalists don't think that this is the answer to climate, and the farmers don't want this on their land. And we don't often see eye to eye. And yet what we're finding is that we can make a partnership together, farmers and environmentalists and others, who are interested in a sustainable, a whole, a financially viable state, where the water is protected, where the land is protected, where we can make the best of this beautiful state that we live in.
Mm-hmm. All words to live by there. Carolyn Raffensperger, Director of the Iowa Science and Environmental Health Network. Is there anything else, Carolyn?
You know, the last thing I want to say is that we really oppose the Dakota Access Pipeline because of its threat to water. And the CO2 pipeline is also a threat to water. It acidifies water when it comes in contact with it. So any spill would acidify the land and the water that it spills into. So it's not just an asphyxiant. It's hazardous in so many ways, but it is an additional threat, not only to climate and to land, but especially to water.
That was Carolyn Raffensperger, the director of the Science and Environmental Health Network, an attorney here in Ames, and we always appreciate all that she does. A strong advocate for clean water. Let's take a music break with more local talk to come.
It's a great privilege to be here. It's a long time since I've been doing this kind of work. In the meantime, thank you. In the meantime, I have been working, doing other things in education and relief, and that is why I'm exceptionally happy today that this fantastic achievement, the Nobel Peace Prize, is being given to the man who is doing so much to alleviate poverty, Mr. Muhammad Yunus. And poverty, actually, the erasion or the eradication of poverty definitely is the way to peace. I'd like to sing a song that has something to do with that, is linked slightly, and you probably recognize this one. Been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Yes, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world as one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. 'Cause I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder, glide on the peace train. Come on, peace train. Yes, peace train, holy roller, everyone jump up on the peace train. Come on, peace train. Now get your bags together, go bring your good friends too, 'cause it's getting nearer, it soon will be with you. Yes, come and join the living, it's not so far from you. And it's getting nearer, soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding louder, ride on the peace train. Come on, peace train, peace train. Crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again.
train sounding loud. Ride on the peace train.
Peace Train from 2006 at the Nobel Peace Prize concert. That was Yusuf Islam. I'm Pat Schlarb. I'm your host with Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. Let's welcome Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames.
Hey, great to be here.
What a great song
to open my Friday with. Thank you for that.
Okay. Well, you're certainly welcome. It is November. I'm sure you got a lot of reminders for us and a lot of announcements.
Last night was our town budget meeting. That is the public meeting that kicks off the budgeting process. So if you missed it, don't worry. It's not too late to get involved in budgeting. At the town budget meeting, the city manager and the finance director sort of go over the timeline for presentations and where the money comes from, where it goes. And so it's a nice overview. Those meetings, like all city meetings, are available on our City of Ames archive. So if you go to cityofames.org and you click on the button that looks like a little TV, it'll take you to the archives where you can watch any meeting. And that town budget meeting is about an hour long, and about the first 20 minutes gives you a really nice overlook on city finances, where the money comes from, where the money goes, how we compare to other cities in our tax rates, and our levies. So it's really great background. Every year I learn something, and I've been in this business for a long time, and I still learn from our staff about their areas of expertise. So I would certainly recommend that people go in and take a look. Mm-hmm. You can email the city manager, Steve Shanker, at any point. His email is in the presentation. He is the presenter, and he would love to hear from you. He even mentioned last night's meeting at some of the emails he's already received. One person said they're very interested in the tree replanting program, and they hope that will be continually funded and perhaps increased in funding in response to the derecho and the need to continue to populate our trees. So people have specific interests in directing finances and funds a certain direction, and we would like to hear that. We also ask that people, if they're asking for budgetary increases, suggest budgetary decreases. Maybe areas where they would be okay with a decreased level of service in order to have a balanced budget. So that's sort of an important part of the equation.
And the access to the new technology to tune in, as you mentioned, where people can go and catch up and then provide value input is one of the modern era adjustments to the COVID-19 situation. So it sounds like the city's making it work.
Yeah. cityofames.org. Look for those archived meetings. You can find a lot of information on our website.
I see you brought along Justin Clausen today.
Well, it seemed like the time of the year. It's getting a little crisp, a little fall-like, and Justin and I just haven't been spending enough time together because he was busy over the summer, but now that it's cooler...
Yeah, here we
My
go.
My phone will light up with Justin's texts and emails as we get into cooler weather because, you know, he's the guy in charge when the snow starts to fall. And I think this is a good time of year before the snow has fallen to remind people of what they need to do if they own property, if they have sidewalks, if they park on a snow route. Justin's the guy, so I wanted him to just remind your listeners of some of that information regarding snow.
Welcome, Public Works Supervisor Justin Clausen, to Local Talk.
Morning, Pat. Thank you.
Hey, great to have you with us once again. Well, we had a freeze, a pretty good freeze this week, but a really nice forecast.
I know. I will take weeks of this upcoming forecast as long as it wants to go.
Yeah. And some people refer to this as Indian summer in a good way. Yeah, we need more Indian summer now if it's going to be 60 degrees this weekend. But as Susan says, just around the corner, and we know what comes next.
Well, this interview is timely because yesterday was Winter Weather Awareness Day from the National Weather Service. So it's that time of year. But the big thing to really think about is, yes, we are coming into the time of year where snow starts to impact everybody. And that's kind of a thing that I'd like to share with everyone. Remember that it impacts everyone in different ways. And when it does come, it blankets the city all at once, and yet we need some time to get through everything and get everything done. So really the first thing to think about is for people that are driving, first thing to remember is, you know, those winter driving skills that we don't practice during the summer and spring, summer, fall month, you know, they get a little rusty. So slow down the first time you see snow in the forecast, or even like you mentioned, frost, things start to get a little bit more slippery. And when that happens, we just need people to slow down. And then that also applies to multimodal people too, on bicycles, pedestrians walking on sidewalks. You know, as that stuff starts to come, again, plan more time. I think everyone just needs to do that. It's a not great thing we want to do every year where we got to slow down and take a little more time, but it's necessary just because Mother Nature throws things at us.
Absolutely. Watch out for our neighbors.
Yeah, Justin, this is Mike Metz, and I just had a question or more or less a comment, and that's to remind folks to clean all of your windows off of your vehicle. Don't make just that little peephole, especially that first time when you're actually trying to look out for folks.
Yeah.
Mike, that's a great comment. I can't emphasize that as much as you did there, too. It's important that you have visibility, because as we know in the snow, even if it's bright daylight and it's sunny, you can start to get a little bit of snow blind and stuff like that. So having that visibility is really critical, so we're safe in vehicles. And you're also safe for those people that aren't in vehicles that are walking as well. So keep a watch out for them, so make sure you clear everything off. That's a great reminder for everyone this morning.
Yeah, as we slow down, be conscientious of people that haven't gotten the memo to slow down. So watch out. Just be alert.
Yep, we're going into what's forecasted as La Nina. According to the National Weather Service, we're seeing indications of a La Nina winter, which what that means is traditionally a little bit greater chances of warmer weather during the winter, which is good, but call me when it's negative 10 in February, like it seems to happen every year, that warmer is on average. The challenge with that sometimes being warmer is it can lead to more conditions that are conducive to icing rather than snow here in Ames in particular. So that's something to keep in mind of. While La Nina can be okay from a temperature standpoint, it can cause other potential issues. But the other thing that usually comes with La Nina is greater risk of additional precipitation, which could possibly mean more snow or more ice or even more rain, which, as we all know, going through the drought here in Iowa, you know, across the nation almost, that's a welcome sign to have more moisture. But in the winter, that can mean more snow. You know, the previous La Nina winters that we've had in the past about 10 years, we've had between 40 and 50 inches of snow when our average is usually around 36. So it's held pretty common that when they say La Nina, we're going to get a little bit more snow. So that seems to be what we're heading into this year as well.
And for people that are new to Ames, are there designated snow routes, and where would they learn what those designated streets are?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are designated snow routes in the city of Ames. So what that means is we have some priority routes where we need to make sure we have vehicular transportation that gets a little bit higher priority. Those are usually public transportation, side-ride routes, or their emergency access routes to get to places. So when it snows 2 inches or more, we require people to move vehicles off those streets to off-street parking or to another street. So you're going to have a red and white sign on your street that's going to indicate that. And if you're sitting at home right now and you wonder if you really are there, you can go to our website, cityofames.org/snow, and it'll take you there. There's some links on there that'll click the snow routes. It'll show you maps of them. Or if you have any questions, just feel free to reach out to anybody at the city. You can call us at the Public Works. You can email us. We will look it up for you and help you get that figured out. But I'd also encourage anybody, even if you're not on a snow route, to please move your vehicle off the street when it snows. Even if it's less than 2 inches, even if it's just a dusting, what that does is that allows us to be more efficient in our plowing operations instead of having to go around cars. And then also, if you're on an alternate side parking, we have to go back the next day and plow the other side that you just moved off of. So anybody that can move the cars off the street helps. It's less things for us to move around, to potentially slide into, and just makes our job a little easier.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good message to bring up. As the snow falls, as it will, keep in mind that any vehicles on the street are just going to be somewhat of an impediment to your clean street efforts.
Exactly right.
Well,
the last thing I'd share with you is don't forget your sidewalks. Property owners' names, I mean, because, you know, we've talked a lot about vehicular transportation, but we're a multimodal city. So there are a lot of people that walk, and, you know, we need those cleared sidewalks. So property owners are responsible for removing snow and ice from sidewalks 10 daylight hours after the end of snow. So you've got 10 daylight hours after it stops snowing to clear your sidewalks. And what we ask you to do is you got to clear it the full width of the sidewalk. That's 4 foot wide. And we want it cleared down to the concrete. Make your best effort on it. There are times when it gets trampled down and you've got to do a little bit of scraping, and we understand that. But that's very important for people that are walking, very important for our society as a whole to make sure we have that multimodal access for people that don't have access to vehicles and need to get to a bus stop or something, that we remember them as well. And so if anybody sees sidewalks that aren't cleared and that are having trouble getting around, they can reach out to us at the city, and then we have a process where we can help enforce that sort of stuff.
Okay. Well, Justin, those are really good things to keep in mind. Thank you for all your snow removal efforts. Is there anything else, Susan or Justin?
Well, I hope Justin could just touch on this one little thing that we get calls on every year, that it's not a big deal, but every so often a snowplow might nick a mailbox. And when that happens, there's a process in place. It's okay. We're not going to leave you high and dry. We will come back. Justin, you want to talk about what people should do if they notice their mailbox tilting or leaning a bit?
They do get hit. Sometimes they get hit by the plows themselves. Sometimes the weight of the snow knocks them over. But it happens. So if anybody notices that, as Susan mentioned, you just have to reach out to us. Believe it or not, we may not know we even hit it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just happens. But what I'd encourage anybody to do is reach out to us, Public Works, or anybody at the city. Just get a note to us. We have an Ames on the Go app. If you haven't downloaded that, there's a specific thing for snow mailbox. You can put it in there. And what happens is we will go out as soon as we notice it. We'll see if we can temporarily fix it. And if not, we'll put up a temporary mailbox. We'll put an additional mailbox up there for you so you can still continue to get your mail. Some of the repairs that are really bad, if we broke off the post in the ground, it may be spring until we can fix it completely. But just reach out to us and let us know. Yes, sometimes we hit things and we don't even realize it. You're not making our jobs any harder. We realize that happens. So just let us know and we'll make it right.
Great. Great point to bring up. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Justin, what happens with all that snow that, for example, you truck out of the city? Where does that go? Obviously, you've got sites someplace for that.
Yeah, we've got two or three places that it'll go. The majority of the snow that comes out of the downtown area, for example, will go to Materials Yard off of Edison Street there in East Central Ames. And we haul it out there and we basically dump it over. We've got a pile of asphalt out there. We dump it over that and we let it melt. And then we're right next to the Skunk River there, so it actually just feeds right back into the water system. But we do that because if we dump it there, it allows some of the things that we pick up in the snow to melt off and stay in our yard, and then it just flows through a little drainage way right into the river. So we've got another one over by the Ames Middle School that we use for stuff on the west side of town. And then newer subdivisions at times, we'll use dead ends up there to kind of move some snow around. You know, that's one of the longest things that we do after the snow ends is hauling snow out of those areas. It takes us a number of days to get through everything, but we go and we just dump it, let it melt, and it goes right back into the watershed.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames, and Justin Claussen. And in your honor, we're going to have a little story about Indian summer, Justin.
Outstanding. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too.
You too. Bye.
Today's phonology is the origin of the term Indian summer. Indian summer describes an interesting turn of events that occurs each autumn. After the first frost, a return to summer-like conditions is described as Indian summer. It is first recorded in Letters from an American Farmer, a 1778 work by the French-American soldier-turned-farmer J.H. St. John de Crèvecoeur. And to quote, "Then a severe frost succeeds, which prepares it to receive the voluminous coat of snow which is soon to follow, though it is often preceded by a short interval of smoke and mildness called the Indian summer." There are many references to the term in American literature in the following 100 years or so. In the 1830s, Indian summer began to be used figuratively to refer to any late flowering following a period of decline. It was well enough established as a phrase by 1834 for John Greenleaf Whittier to use the term that way,
when in his poem Memories, he wrote of the Indian Summer of the Heart. As a climatic event, it is known throughout the world and is technically called a weather singularity. That is, a climatic event that recurs around the same time each year. The frequency, depth, and longevity of the weather pattern is clearly dependent on geography. It is most frequently associated with the eastern and central states of the United States, which have a suitable climate to generate the weather pattern, that is, a wide variation of temperature and wind strength from summer to winter. Many of those states are also famous for their areas of hardwood forest, which show up well during Indian summers when the leaves have already begun to turn and the sun is shining. So why Indian? Well, no one knows, but it is commonplace when no one knows. Many people have guessed, and here are a few of the more commonly repeated guesses. When European settlers first came across the phenomenon in America, it became known as the Indians' summer. The haziness of the Indian summer weather was caused by prairie fires deliberately set by Native American tribes. They would start the fires, and then in the spring, the lush greenery would attract their game of deer and buffalo, and that worked out well, so they would burn each autumn. Another suggestion is that it was a period when First Nation or Native American people harvested their crops. The phenomenon was more common in what were then North American Indian territories. Most assuredly, Indian summer is considered a bonus of beautiful autumn weather. After our first frost, we want beautiful weather. We want more beautiful weather to enjoy Iowa's natural resources and Iowa's beautiful lands. And that's our phenology for today. Cool. Let's welcome from ISU Extension, Jess Soderstrom. Hello, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
We're good here. How are you?
I'm doing good.
How is the world of Extension?
Oh, it is good as always, but we are gearing up. I feel like we haven't stopped moving since summer, doing lots of youth programs and adult programs and planning different events. So we've been busy.
And so what's in store here for this month of November, Jess?
Well, we've got quite a few things going on. One opportunity for adults to learn more about what Extension has to offer or learn more about our resources, as well as even just if you have a specific question and you can't make it to our office in Ames or you don't want to ask over the phone or by email, we are doing a new campaign that we're calling Extension on the Road. So that is when we travel to each community in Story County to reach more of our clients. So we'll have different resources available at that time. There will always be a staff member present. So if you have any questions, you can come there. For our November dates, we'll be in Story City at Key Cooperative on November 9th. On November 12th, we'll be in Deering at the Security State Bank. And on the 18th, we'll be in Maxwell at the bank in Maxwell. So usually those times we've moved to more of a middle of the afternoon to accommodate those businesses' hours. But so usually like 2 to 4:30 is when we're there. But if you're interested in our other Extension on the Road dates, or if you forgot where we were going to be after I just listed them off, you can go to our website, which is extension.iastate.edu/story, and look at our public calendar there. And you can also follow us on Facebook. We list all of our events on Facebook as well. And we do have an Instagram page, too.
So if I went to Facebook and just searched under Extension Story County, you would come up?
Yeah. Our full title is actually ISU Extension and Outreach Story County. So as long as you get in the Extension and Story County, you should be able to find us.
And what can people anticipate November 9th at your Story City stop, for instance?
Well, it is really just commonly referred to it as a tabling event. So We just have all of our resources. Well, not all of our resources, because we would need about 15 tables for that. But we have a table with different program flyers to promote things that are coming up in the community. We are giving out mental health resource bags that have different cards and times and places that people are able to reach out for those mental health resources. And then, of course, I always promote 4-H. I'm the 4-H coordinator for Story County Extension. So if you have questions about the 4-H program, or even if you need to drop something off for 4-H or for any of our programs, you can do it at the Key Cooperative in Story City on the 9th.
Oh, super. So 4-H is in your corner of expertise. Are there active 4-H chapters in Story City and Ziering and also at Maxwell?
Yeah, so we have a community club in almost every town in Story County. So for Story City, it would be the Roland Story LTS Club. That is an opportunity for 4th through 12th graders, but they do have a Clover Kid Club as well. And that is for our kindergarten through 3rd graders. And then in Ziering, we don't have a club that meets in Ziering, but we do have the Country Pioneers. They meet in Colo, and it's mostly made of students that go to Colonesco School. So if you live in Ziering and you go to Colonesco, if you join the Country Pioneers Club, you'll probably have a friend in that club with you.
All right. I'm thinking there will be a great network of spreading the word when you're headed to those communities, and what a great program. Is there anything else that we need to include here, but while we got a couple minutes?
Yeah, I will just go ahead and do a general plug for the 4-H program. So I've talked about it before, but if people aren't sure either how to get started or what 4-H is all about, I like to first remind people that you don't have to live on a farm to be in the 4-H program. You don't have to have livestock. There are opportunities for youth in kindergarten through 12th grade, no matter what your interests are. We have different robotics clubs, we have a culinary club, and then we do just have our regular community clubs that cover kind of all of our project areas. If they're interested in getting started in 4-H, or if you want to learn more information, you can call our office or send an email and ask for Jess. The phone number for our office is 515-337-1601, and our general office email is story@iastate.edu. There's a lot of ways to get a hold of us, and we hope that you do.
Okay, xstory@iastate.edu.
Correct.
That's great. Thank you so much, Jess Soderstrom. Really appreciate your coming on Local Talk.
Yes.
Thank you, Jess Soderstrom. Yes. Have a good weekend. Yes, thank you so much. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday at 89.1 FM. And tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. And hit the play KHOI FM button. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to that website and find the yellow donate button at khoifm.org. Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy, and thanks to our guests, Carolyn Raffensperger, Justin Claussen, Susan Guiazda, and Jess Soderstrom from ISU Extension. This is Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard were Yusuf Islam, Morning Has Broken, and Peace Train. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Remember, you, the listener, are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
see you again on the radio.